Welcome to Portia Patter with Bracken Helms, the show where we hear Bracken and his distinguished guests from the Portia community patter on about Porsches and all things automotive. Portia Patter is sponsored by Circuit 64. Circuit 64 creates authentic automotive apparel made for like-minded automotive enthusiasts. The links for Circuit 64 are in the show notes. Okay, let's get to it.
Larry Moulton, part three. Okay, in this one, I think you start to see where my biases lie and where my interests lie. Obviously, it's also nostalgic reasons growing up, but you can see where Larry's interests lie in certain cars, and they seem to be similar to mine. And I grew up going to the Porsche dealer and seeing Larry, and obviously I had some sort of respect for him because not only had he worked at the Porsche dealership since the 356, but he was also a racer, so he knew both sides of it. Also, I have interviewed my dad, which I'm probably not going to publish for a while because who wants to start a podcast and then be like, this fool is interviewing his own dad? Like, I don't want to listen to this. But I do think it's a good interview because he's been a Porsche broker for 40 plus years. But he says similar things and his preferences are pretty similar to what Larry's are. When I first moved to California and started going to some of these Porsche meets, some of the early Porsche meets I went to, they were like almost acting like, your car is so old. So then I started going to different Porsche meets and now it's like, your car is so new. You're kind of taking that with a grain of salt because I trust my own opinion. And you also know like some of the people you've talked to, like people I just mentioned, actually know the cars and are around the cars every day. It's their business. They know the cars inside and out. I also have noticed since I've started listening to myself when I'm doing these interviews, when I get overexcited and I'm all blabbering, my grammar starts to fail. Anyway, here's part three of Larry Moulton.
So air-cooled or water-cooled?
Well, I'm an air-cooled guy. But they did in these later years now. They've made so much advance in the water-cool that the water-cooled cars are really good now.
What do you like about the air-cooled cars?
They're just simplistic.
What do you like about the water-cooled cars?
Well, the new ones, like the GT3s and GT3 RSs, and, you know, they've got that system really good. And they put out a phenomenal amount of horsepower. And they're really reliable for the most part.
Favorite water-cooled?
Probably, I think my favorite one now is the new GT3s and GT3 RS Porsches. The only thing I don't like about them is they're so big. They are a big car now.
Right.
You see a Carrera, your car, when you sit next to it, it's a big car.
Yeah. Favorite air-cooled?
Like I say, I like the old Carrera, but if I had to have one to drive every day, I'd probably be a 993.
996 or 997, we kind of aren't answering.
Yeah.
991 or 992?
I like the 991 better.
What's your favorite water-cooled 911 series?
Probably the 991s.
Favorite 356?
Speedster.
PDK or manual?
That's a good one. I like driving manuals, but the new PDK is so much fun to drive. So I actually think if I were buying a new one, I had the money to buy a brand new one, I'd buy a PDK.
915 or G50?
I like the 915.
I've interviewed quite a few people, and that's a big question for me because when I was looking for my car, my dad just says, just find the nicest one you can. And I think he actually prefers the 915. But you look on Bring a Trailer, and it's like, oh, does it have a G50? Mm-hmm. Or some of these people that are writing magazines now, like you read, oh, well, you know, the buyer's guide, oh, you know, try to get the G50. But I've interviewed some prominent people, and I've never heard anybody pick the G50. They've said they're indifferent, but I've never said, oh, G50.
The synchro mesh systems in that was so much better than the 915. But if you drove a 915 right, you didn't have problems with it. People would ramp, try to speed shift into second and try to downshift, you know, ramming them into first and wear all the synchro rings out. But if you just drive them and just not try to outrun the gears, if you will, they're a pretty good gearbox. I didn't like the G50 because it was kind of noisy. And there's a few issues with the first ones that there always is, you know, the clutch system and stuff like that. That's all, it's all fixable. And they don't break. I'll give you that. G50's really tough. But I have no problem driving a 915. I don't like 915.
Yeah, I talked to someone at one of the, it was down at the LA Lit Show, and he was talking to me quite length with the 915 and the G50. He had both cars at one point, and he ended up selling the G50. His reasoning was he felt like the 915 drove lighter. I know the G50 is heavier, but he must have really known his cars to where he could feel the difference.
Probably someone that just drove it instead of trying to outrun everything with the transmission. Because a lot of people, they just ram them into first and ram them into second. And if you just shift them nice like you're supposed to, that doesn't happen.
So I've read, and my dad's told me, he's asked you once and you said that you really like the 84-85 Carrera. And then I read in like an interview more than once that you said that. Why those years and not the later ones? And why did you not say 86? Because 86...
Yeah, I just probably didn't say 86. I just in that Carrera.
Okay. And is it just because of the 915 or is there another reason?
No. I just like the 915 cars.
Okay.
And if I was looking for a car and it was really a nice... say 86, 85 Carrera, and, you know, and also a nice, you know, 87, I wouldn't hesitate at all buying a 915 car.
Right. What new Porsche would you buy today?
Well, it depends on what I'm going to do with it. The new ones are so nice. Just a nice touring car. I seen one the other day. It was called a Touring.
Okay, yeah.
And it didn't have all the fins and all the stuff. Beautiful car.
Right.
That would be a nice car to drive. If I wanted to get really sporty, I'd do the GT3 line, but those things are a lot of work.
The GT3 is a Touring.
Yeah.
I mean, the Touring is a GT3.
Yeah, but it's detuned a little bit. It's more comfort inside. Because GT3 every day, getting in and out of it, the seats and all the stuff, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Thoughts today on Porsche? I mean, in your day, it's gone from an independent small company that now it's pretty... powerhouse of a company, you know, sports cars to SUVs.
How much trouble could I get in?
Well, you could get in as many trouble as you want, and then we can edit out when you get nervous about whatever, I guess. I don't know. It's up to you.
Well, everything about sports cars, you know, is better now. You know, they perform in fantastic cars. The SUVs, they're nice cars for a while. One of the biggest problems is they've got too many VW parts in. You know, they put Audi motors in them now, and the Volkswagen parts in them. The last of the, I guess around 16, 17, in the Cayenne, the last of the V8s, they were really good. They were really solid. The new cars, like the hot V ones with the turbo set that sits on top of the engine, and it's just problematic. You know, I just feel like they cheapened the line myself. But the sports cars are still good. And the Panamera, we don't even discuss that. That was really bad.
Okay. this question I call the Skyline GTR effect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm referring to the Nissan.
Mm-hmm.
So when it first came out, like, oh, it does everything great. It does everything. It corners. It feels like, you know, all this. It was the greatest thing since sliced bread when it came out. But it wasn't less than a year. They start testing it, and I guess after they realize that the car does everything so great, they start getting kind of, I guess, bored with it. And so you've seen this over and over again where like, oh, it does everything, but I don't know if I would put that in the first place on a comparison test. And, oh, but this, it did this, and I didn't get the fun of this. Do you think Porsche is kind of like that? Like, we know the turbo has gotten more grand touring for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But is it so good that it does everything great that like, some of the fun is come out of it or whatever?
When they first started doing the traction controls and that in the cars, they got a lot of complaints because the car was taking care of itself. You had the PDK, you had the ABS, the car wouldn't spin out. you know, because it would apply brakes to keep it straight and all that. They've taken the driver out of a lot of it. And I think that's what a lot of people miss. That's why they wanted stick shifts. You know, Porsche announced they were not going to build any more stick shifts. Well, they got a lot of blowback, and now they're building some, you can order stick shifts now. I think that Touring I've seen had a stick shift.
Yeah.
I think they get to the point that they take the guy out of the car. You know, you're along for the ride, but it's hard to make a big mistake.
Yeah.
They did make a big advancement, finally, in the Porsches. In the new GT3 RSs and the GT4s, you know, RSs. They got AA arm front suspension. They got rid of that McPherson strut. That'll be a big improvement.
Do you think Porsche will ever build, and this is kind of questionable, but do you think Porsche will ever build, I would say, a 356 Speedster? And we can argue that that wasn't even really their idea. It was Hoffman, or maybe not even Hoffman, maybe Johnny von Neumann or Johnny, whatever his name was. They were like, okay, we'll just take everything out. And so the 356 Speedster goes down as, oh, you know, that iconic car. And then you could say 73 RS, and I don't even know if that was planned because they just wanted to go racing and they just wanted to homologate that.
Yeah.
But I feel like they've had chances, but I don't know if they will, especially now that we're going to electric. I mean, it's a whole new ball game now, but it's like, there was times where like, I thought, okay, if they put all their money into maybe a GT4, which is a smaller car, but even the GT4 is getting bigger. It's just, I mean, it seems like everybody I talk to says, you know, it'd be so nice if they just had like a basic car. They don't have to put all the big engine in. Of course, they have to do like safety now that they didn't used to. But they could still make a light, simple car that would probably, people would look after 20 years from now, be like, oh, that was a high mark.
Well, yeah, they, you know, they built the Speedster in the, you know, the Carrera. And then they built the 964 Speedster. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And they have, and then they did the Boxster Spider and a few of those things. I think if they took that format and build kind of a, if you will, a little more bare bones, really sporty car on the same thoughts that the Speedster was, they'd sell lots of them. Because people like that stuff. There's a lot of guys that just like driving them.
There's people that buy the Porsche because if it's a Porsche, then there's that true enthusiast.
Well, that's exactly right. When I was there, there was basically two types of customers. There was the enthusiast Porsche, and then there was the guy that just leased it and drove it for 2 years and got rid of it and bought another color. That really didn't have, other than the fact you could say he had the Porsche and he drove around, it wasn't the enthusiast mentality, if you will.
Right. But then that even makes me think, do enthusiasts really know what they want? Because if you think about it, like the 964 RS didn't come here, but that car was not liked at the time. Like, a lot of people didn't like it, but now it's like, oh, well, that's, now it's huge. Oh, that's a great car, you know, basic and okay. It's a little stiff, like, but at the time they didn't like it. I'm trying to think of another one. Another example that's like completely far-fetched is the Chevrolet SS that, I don't know if it's built on a Malibu or what, it just probably was like, they quit building it maybe 4 years ago, but like they asked Chevrolet to build that car for years. Like, oh, well, Dodge has got the Charger and why can't Chevrolet make like a driver's oriented sedan that a European like car, like a sporty Mercedes or an M BMW, why can't they do that with like a sedan? And so they did it.
Yeah.
And no one bought it.
Yeah.
And now in the used market, they're worth good money. Mm-hmm. And they're only a couple years old. And now everybody wants them again.
It's like that the Holden out of Australia.
Right.
You know, when they brought that Pontiac GT over here in like 2004 with the Corvette motor, that was basically a Holden.
Right. We saw one today.
And
they're
worth
the mountains.
Yeah, they're worth a lot now. You know, because there's just that group of people that are way into it. I think the people I see now, the younger guys, especially the guys with lots of money, they just want GT3s, they want RSs, and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And they take the mufflers off and make all the noise they can get. And it's more, and then they paint them three different colors and neon wheels. And, you know, it's just a different mentality.
What was the biggest innovation that blew your mind, or some of the bigger innovations that blew your mind along the way?
Well, I think when they they got to the point that they did fuel injection and electronic ignitions and hydraulic lifters, like in the 993s. All the maintenance was gone. No more points, no more valve adjustments, you know. And it just got, the car got so much better. It just took a lot of that effort out of the car. And they just kept getting better and better and faster and faster. Same speed with less displacement. And it was all electronic. You know, you want more horsepower, you change the ECU and remap it. It's a completely different world now.
Perfect starter Porsche.
I think probably an SC Carrera in that line. Or a real, if you can find one, a real nice 996, 997. You know, when it's well taken care of.
I mean, yeah, I think everybody used to say like the G-body was the perfect starter, but even they're getting expensive, so that's kind of
a lot of money
working its way out of a starter Porsche category now.
And I actually like Caymans, you know, and a Cayman's really a nice car, especially if you get a later Cayman, like a 2016, 17, before they did the four-cylinder motors.
Right.
That's a nice car. That had the second-gen engine in it, the direct injection.
Yeah.
Nice car. They're fun to drive.
What do you think about the 987s?
They're okay. I have some friends got a lot of miles on them. And they're good cars.
I know the first part of the 987, the 987-1 has the still IMS issues.
Yeah.
And then the 987-2, which was 2009 and newer.
Yeah, that has a good motor in there. If you want to call it. It's bulletproof, except for we did a few high-pressure pumps, but other than that, nothing.
So you like the 981?
Like if I was going to buy a Cayman or a Boxer, that's what I'd want. The last of those.
Thoughts on rise of air-cooled prices?
Well, it's like anything older, it's hard to get. And it's all relevant on that. Each car is going to be relevant on how much it's worth. I went to a Porsche school in Atlanta, the last one I went to, and they had a bring what Porsche you want to bring auction. And the place had about 200 Porsches in there, everywhere from push it in to race cars. And they were getting so much money out of air-cooled cars. We seen the list after we got home of what they sold for. And it was just insane. They had a Speedster there that had no paint on it from Texas. It had the seats in it, the original motor in it. I don't know if it ran. Everything else was just piled around it. You got $400,000 on it. Well, it's just whatever somebody wants bad enough.
Yeah. I mean, me and my friend kind of got into an argument. Well, I mean, we were debating back and forth. And yeah, part of me for a long time was like, oh, this sucks that the prices are going up. But then when I started hearing other people say, well, this isn't justified. And you get the people on like social media that, oh, well, a G-body was, you could buy them for $718 or $17,000, $15,000 a couple years ago. And it's like, okay, well, you could make that same argument a little bit further back with the, I mean, my dad sold that, what was it, 71, 72, when I was in high school. It had 13,000 miles, and he sold it for around 13,000.
Yeah, that's about what they got.
And it was an S. And now it's like, oh, well, that's 200 grand. Well, okay, so, I mean, when I was in high school, I knew I wanted a G-body, which people may think I'm crazy. And so I waited a little bit longer, but it was like, I could have bought, in high school, I could have bought a pre-impact car. Yeah. I mean, my dad could have found one all day long for under 10 grand. And now they're worth a lot. But then people will make arguments about, well, I can't believe the G-body. Well, it's the same story.
Yeah.
But the argument that me and my friend got into was, well, they were not that much that long ago. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, if you turn it around and look at it, the glass is half full. This is German engineering at the pinnacle that they kept working. And the parts are all expensive. Everything's done to perfection. And you see old muscle cars that are bringing big money. Why do you not expect these to go up in price? You think they're just going to be cheap forever?
No, those cars, I think the enthusiasts really want them. People who know Porsche.
Right.
They want to connect with the old car, the build quality, the sound, the smell, and drive them. Because they're a real driver car. You know, you get in and nothing's helping you. There's no power steering, there's no ABS. They're just fun to drive.
Yeah, the enthusiasts are the ones that make all the prices go up, because even more recent cars, the ones that bring all the money are the ones with less options.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people go buy a brand new, we'll say GT3, and they throw every option they can, And then years later, it's going to be like the ones that are going to be worth more money are the ones with less options.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, comment, like, and share with your friends. Feel free to send questions or suggestions to the email in the description of the show. Special thanks to our sponsor, Circuit 64. Goodbye for now. We hope we can get together again for our next episode. Now get out there and enjoy the cars and the people.